FCC recently released the Public Safety National Broadband Plan. Chief Jeff Johnson, International Association of Fire Chiefs President, joins me today to discuss the plan and what it means to public safety leadership. He also will discuss changes to the Insurance Service Office's rating system. In addition to serving as the IAFC President, Chief Johnson also serves on Oregon's State Interoperability Executive Council. Thank you for joining us today, Chief.
Thank you, Mary Rose.
I'd first like to discuss the Public Safety National Broadband Plan. The FCC recently released it to the public. What's the association's reaction to the plan?
Well, I think, first off, we found some things that we like about the FCC's plan, and then also we found some things that we don't believe will work. I think probably first and foremost, the things that we like that were good is that it recognizes the need for roaming and, discusses some need to do rulemaking on roaming and priority setting and some of those kind of components to national data roaming and a national data plan. Some of the things we don't necessarily like, I think that we believe that the FCC does not recognize how much spectrum public safety needs. The FCC is planning for us to essentially have the 10 megahertz spectrum that we currently have, and it is the public safety community's belief that we need the full 20 megahertz, and we have studies, especially out of the city of New York, that would substantiate that. So I think that's probably the biggest problem that we have, is that we believe we need 20 megahertz of contiguous spectrum. I think the second area that we struggle with their plan is while they talk about priority use for public safety as we roam onto commercial networks, they don't do a good job of defining how they're going to set those priorities, because today prioritization has not worked well for the fire service, and often the promises the commercial providers have not held up when an emergency happens and we need to use the network. Third, the FCC's plan talks about some funding in excess of $6.5 billion for funding. And I think they're all very well intentioned, but I think all of us that know Capitol Hill know there's a difference between asking for the money, getting the money, and third, most importantly, get the money appropriated. So I think the public safety community is very concerned about abandoning what we know as the D block, the 10 megahertz of spectrum in the D block, abandoning that to auction, only to find out later that that the appropriation didn't come through, or that the prioritization piece on commercial roaming didn't happen. And then lastly, I think we're all very worried about if we are roaming on commercial cellular networks, I think we're very worried that no one will be able to hold them accountable when things don't happen the way they should. And again, public safety is one of those areas we can't afford to fail. Dropped calls are not okay on critical public safety communications infrastructure. I think those are our primary concerns.
And, you mentioned the $6.5 billion for capital expenditures. Is there anything the association is doing to work to ensure these funds are secured? I mean, what are you guys doing in that front?
Well, we're having continued dialogue with the FCC and their representatives, trying to talk about just what does this mean. And we're having very candid discussions about what assurances do we have that the requested money, even if Congress passes it, what's the assurance that we'll get it, and talking about what we have at risk. So today, I don't think there's any effort on behalf of public safety to lobby for the $6.5 billion or the FCC's plan, and that's largely because we're working through the details with the FCC. Again, there's things that we like, and Admiral Barnett, who's leading this effort, is a person we all hold in very high esteem. However, the public safety community believes this plan comes up short, largely because of asking public safety to rely on the commercial cellular networks for a majority or at least a large percentage of our communication volume.
So what's the overall buzz, would you say, on Capitol Hill about the broadband plan?
Well, it's kind of like everything on Capitol Hill, you know, it's a little bifurcated. I think that some legislators are ecstatic. They're thrilled with the broadband plan, and they're happy that everyone will have an affordable broadband, even in remote areas. And, you know, they're pretty confident that the money will come along to pay for it. Others are more circumspect and see the FCC's broadband plan as a step in the right direction, but know we have a lot of work ahead of us. I think some, and probably the Republicans, see this as a restatement of the benefits of the private sector and the free enterprise system. And to those people, asking public safety data communications to ride on the commercial cellular phone networks makes a lot of sense. And then a few who we think have their eyes wide open understand that this plan is so far only a blueprint, and that Congress will have to play a heavy-duty role in shaping the plan and seeing how it can be afforded in this time of a growing deficit. I think this probably, in my opinion, this describes Chairman Henry Waxman of the House Energy and Commerce Committee, who has jurisdiction on the issue. He's holding a hearing this week, and all five FCC commissioners will testify. Of course, and until the other evening, the broadband plan was playing a bit of a second fiddle to the health care reform bill, and I think now largely that's behind us, and I think we'll now see the broadband plan move to center stage. But that isn't the only issue. I mean, we have a struggling job market, pretty poor economy, two wars, appropriations, and a tough election coming up in November, and that election just got tougher. Mm-hmm. I think that we're trying to figure out where Congress would come down. I think what public safety wants is really clear to us. You know, public safety community, and this isn't just the IAFC. The International Association of Fire Chiefs, along with Major City Police and the International Association of Chiefs of Police, APCO and NENA, really all, virtually all the national public safety associations are completely aligned on this issue, and here's what we want. We want our data and our critical communications to ride on spectrum that's licensed to public safety. We need that network to be owned, operated, and controlled by us. Now, if we took the FCC's vision and flipped that on its ear a little bit and had the commercial cellular phone companies roaming onto our network when it has excess capacity, that gives us a lot of comfort and reliability. We need our network, as I said, to be hardened and reliable. We need a single technical approach, a national network, which basically feeds into a national network. And that's why the Public Safety Broadband Licensee, which is the Spectrum Trust, is made up of a board controlled of us, public safety responders. And they would set the technical standards for our nationwide network. And many of you probably saw APCO declare LTE, long-term evolution, as the digital standard for that network. Mm-hmm. Also, I think we need 700 megahertz, Mary Rose, as we believe that spectrum is most important to us because it's right beside where we live. Mm-hmm. And you know, the signal is very similar to the voice signal, and that means towers are a lot more likely to be placed in the proper place. And then bottom line is we need priority. And we're hoping that the FCC will recognize our need for this much contiguous spectrum.
Okay, so in your opinion, based on what we've talked about, what do public safety agencies need to be doing to prepare for, you know, this network?
Well, I think our ask today is that we would like the D block, the 10 megahertz in the D block, we'd like that removed from auction. It's set to go to auction within the year, and we would like Congress to remove that from auction and assign it to the Public Safety Broadband Licensee, which is the Spectrum Trust. That does require legislation. We'd also like that legislation to require the FCC to adopt rules that allow those of us, like Oregon, that's ready to build our system and has our system funded, allow us to build that locally or regionally and adopt the standards adopted by the Public Safety Broadband Licensee to make sure that when Oregon's system hooks to Idaho's system, eventually that system of networks becomes a national system. So I think what we need from our responders and the public safety community today is to pay very close attention to this. And when your public safety associations, the International Association of Fire Chiefs specifically in this case, when we call for your help to reach out to your individual senators and representatives and ask them to deliver on assigning the D block to the PSBL.
You mentioned
today, though.
Go ahead.
Today, though, I don't think we have an ask other than to watch closely as those of us negotiating for public safety watch closely as we work with the FCC to try to create a common vision.
Obviously, there's still some hurdles that need to be overcome as this moves forward, and you mentioned your own state. You know, how will what's going on with the broadband network affect the build-out of Oregon's statewide interoperability network?
Well, in Oregon, I chair the Statewide Interoperability Executive Council and have for the last 8 years, and we started from scratch in this state. And a lot of states are in the place that Oregon is. We started from scratch needing to build a statewide network ground up, and now we have that funded. We're currently under construction in phase one, and we're building the towers and the buildings and the microwave hall back, and we'll hang the RF part, which holds the voice and data. We'll hang that last later in the phase because we'd really like to see this stuff resolved as much as possible. But with that said, we're using the 700 digital system in Oregon, and if we could build a data system in the same spectrum, then it's far more likely that our towers are placed in the right place for a data system in the same spectrum. And I think if we ever have to seek more capacity by being moved to another frequency band, say 2.9 or something else, if we ever have to do that, then that changes where your towers need to be placed. And, you know, I'm concerned that that just adds cost and complexity. But right now, Oregon is applying for a waiver. We hope to build out at least the A-block 10 megahertz high-speed broadband system for the state of Oregon, and hopefully we'll resolve the D-block question before the end of that. And the FCC has said that they intend to resolve the waivers. I believe there's 14. Oregon will be the 15th. They intend to resolve those waivers within the year. So if they grant our waiver, Oregon will build a high-speed broadband data system on 10 megahertz and hoping for 20.
Okay, now finally, this is a little bit of a different topic. Could you, in general, talk a little bit about what the ISO has done to change the rating system and how it affects the fire service?
Mary Rose, it's an excellent question. I think first I need to start by complimenting ISO. Their leadership recognized it was time for an upgrade and a change. And Assistant Chief Paul Lesage from Tualatin Valley Fire and Rescue and I have been representing the IFC and reviewing some of the major changes that they've undergone at ISO. And let me give you kind of a thumbnail of what those are. First and foremost, they have tied many of the standards, the equipment standards, the tool standards, the training standards, many of those kinds of standards, to NFPA standards. And what that will allow to happen is that the standards are more ever fresh. I believe it was the technology standard with ISO that hadn't been changed since 1978. And I graduated from high school in 1978, and I had never even heard of a cell phone. So you can just imagine what happened between 1978 and today in the technology world, and their standard had not kept up.
Right.
There are other things they've done. They've also created, and I think this is the biggest one. They have created a bifurcated system. One, to do kind of the retrospective subjective analysis like most of us are used to, which is they take a look at how much hose and how much training and your equipment and your water. They take a look at those kinds of things and station placement. And they try to make some assessment about how effective you'll be at fighting fire based on that set of standards. The second way is more contemporary, and that is a science-based model. By that I mean, for those of us that run accredited fire departments, our motto is let the science speak. We keep profoundly detailed data sets on every aspect of the business. We deploy our resources not based on where the stations are necessarily, but more in a standard of cover basis. In many cases, that means dynamic deployment. And what ISO will do in those cases is they will look at your science and have you demonstrate to them that you're more effective than you were before. I'll give you a perfect example, because I'm going to guess there's going to be listeners that do not know what I'm saying when I say standard of cover, or dynamic deployment, or science-based. I grew up in a fire service, Mary Rose, where your station was where it was, and your response time depended on how far the call was from your station and how fast you drove and what kind of traffic and barriers you encountered along the way.
Okay.
That was response time. In a system like ours at Tualatin Valley Fire and Rescue, we have dynamic deployment. What that means is that although we may have 22 stations, we may have, for example, 27 units on the road. Some of those units only work 6 days a week from 7 in the morning until 7 at night because we're three times as busy in the daytime. And some of those units may only handle minor motor vehicle accidents, chirping smoke alarms, and abdominal pain so that we can keep our larger, heavier staffed units in the heart of their response area ready for calls that need that particular set of tools and staffing. Dynamic deployment is really about putting the number and a number of units on the road to match your demand, and then calculating your effectiveness in fractile terms. So it isn't my average response time's 4 minutes. We talk in terms of we're there 90% of the time in 5 minutes, or 80% of the time in 4 minutes.
Right.
Because the higher you drive those percentages, the more accurately you're representing what you do. So that's what we're talking about, is that ISO turns to science-based organizations and says, you show me, are you being more effective? Because in an organization, let's say like mine, and there's many of us, where your fire stations are is irrelevant if your units aren't in them.
Exactly.
You're running 15 calls a day, and your average time on task is an hour. It doesn't matter where your station was, because you're not in it, and you're leaving this call to take the next one. In a science-based organization, it's all about how often are you in the right spot, and the right spot may not be your fire station, and your units flow seamlessly through the area, and it's all about matching the resource to the call type and flowing seamlessly back and forth through the area. You may start at a station, and you may even be housed at a station, but there's elements that are not. And the new system from ISO recognizes that. What we don't know, Mary Rose, is this. We don't know what happens when you stack the old rating system up against the new, the science-based rating system. We don't know what happens when you push equals comparing the two. And ISO is currently out for comment, and they've turned to the IFC to help them find departments by which to test this with. But I think, here's why I think ISO is being so smart, is if they came into a science-based department and said, sorry folks, your rating just got worse, they run a very high risk that a science-based organization will say, oh really, let me show you what the science says about how good we were the last time you rated us and how good we are today, and we can prove it. You're guessing, we can prove it. And I think ISO was very wise to see that train coming and to embrace science-based deployment.
Well, thank you for your time today, Chief.
Thank you, Mary Rose.
That completes our podcast. This is Mary Rose Roberts. Thank you for listening.